भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यम् नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60, entitled Krishna Teases Rukmini, Text Number 47. Naivalikam Aham Manye Vachas Te Madhusudana Ambaya Eva Hi Prayaha कन्यायाः स्याद् रतिः क्वचित् नैवालिकाम् अहम् मन्ये वचस्ते मधुसूदन अम्बाया एव हि प्रायः कन्यायाः स्याद् रतिः क्वचित् नैवालिकम् अहम् मन्ये वचस्ते मधुसूदन अम्बाया एव हि प्रायः कन्यायाः स्याद् रतिः क्वचित् नैवालिकम् अहम् मन्ये वचस्ते मधुसूदन अम्बाया एव हि प्रायः कन्यायाः स्यात् रतिः क्वचित् नैवालिकामहं मन्ये वचस्ते मधुसूदन कन्यायाः इव हि प्रायः नैवालिकम् अहम् मन्ये वचस्ते मधुसूदन न्यायाय स्वति क्वचित्।
माताजी
नैवालिकम् अहम् मन्ये क्वचित्ते मधुसूदन अम्बाया हि वहि प्रायः कन्याया स्वात् क्वचिरचित्
न नॉट एव इंडीड अलिकम् फॉल्स अहम् आय मन्ये थिंक वचः वर्ड्स ते योर मधुसूदना ओ किलर ऑफ मधु अम्बायाः ऑफ अम्बा एव हि सर्टनली प्रायः जनरली कन्यायाः The maiden Syad arose Ratihi attraction to Shalva Kachit once translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Rishila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: actually, I don't consider your words false, Madhusudana. Quite often an unmarried girl is attracted to a man, as in case of Amba. Purport. Having refuted everything Lord Krishna said, Srimati Rukmini, in a gracious frame of mind, now praises the truthfulness of his statements. In other words, she accepts that Lord Krishna used her as an example to elucidate ordinary female psychology. The king of Kashi had three daughters, Amba, Ambalika and Ambika. And Amba was attracted to Shalva. The story is narrated in the Mahabharata.
Om Agyanti Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakham Vitamstha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratushe Namaha Panchatatvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namasute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Pri Vancha Galbadaruvyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Naivalikam Aham Manne Vachaste Madhusudana Ambaya Evahi Prayaha Kanyayaha Syadrati Kvachet. Actually, I don't consider your words false, Madhusudan. Quite often an unmarried girl is attracted to a man, as in case of Amba. So this is the conclusion of Srimati Rukmini Devi's refutation to Krishna's words of teasing Rukmini, and the ending of her refutations is concluding on a note of humility and self-defeat. She admits that ultimately it is her weakness that she married Krishna, and it is her ordinariness which helped her or which forced her to choose Krishna as her husband. In a sense that she bows in defeat to Krishna and says that you accept me because I have no discrimination. In fact, she helplessly puts herself in the ordinary position of an ordinary female, and she says that I was an unmarried girl and I just became attracted to you just like Amba was attracted to Shalva. So many a times great devotees or even the internal potency of Lord Srimati Rukmini Devi is putting herself in a very ordinary position to show how Krishna is great. Once one devotee, Shubhanand Prabhu, he went to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, I want to write a book on Vedic psychology, that which compares the Vedic psychology with the mundane psychology." Prabhupada said, "What? Have you read material psychology?" He said, "No, Prabhupada." "Have you read my books?" "Yes, Prabhupada." "What is in my books?" He said, "Well, in the books we say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are living entities beyond this matter and beyond the mind and senses. So ultimately how the living entity is trapped on the levels of mind, intelligence and ego. I want to explain really in a way that how one..." So Prabhupada said, "What is the goal?" And he said, "The goal of the book?" Prabhupada said, "No, goal. What is the goal?" And he said, "The goal is actually to surrender to Krishna." Prabhupada said, "Then you can write the book." If the conclusion is very clear, if the tattva is very refined and very pristine, whatever we present is actually in terms of pure bhakti. We may use mundane psychology to compare with Vedic psychology to bring people to the goal so that people can appreciate. Prabhupada said ultimately they should accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. Once I guess one devotee who had left the institution of ISKCON and he has started something else. And this pastime shows Prabhupada's broad-mindedness and acceptance of essence. And devotees ask Prabhupada, actually he is doing something, he is deviating. Prabhupada said, "As long as the preaching leads one to surrender to Krishna, it is all in the realm of pure devotion service." Prabhupada said, "Just like a tree has many branches. The tree may have many branches, but the fruit or the taste of the fruit must be the same. It should not happen that a different branch should have a different taste. One tree of pure devotion service can have many branches, and many branches can have many fruits. But the tree's fruit, the taste of that fruit of the different branches must be one. The ripening may be at different stages, but the taste cannot be different." So here Rukmini Devi is finally admitting that, you know, "I am an ordinary lady and I was helpless. So now I have committed a mistake, now you have to bear with me." In a similar sense, like Advaita Acharya, he called Krishna to appear on this planet Earth because he was seeing the overwhelming influence of illusion, the bewilderment of material energy, and everyone, though very cultural, so-called spiritual, lost the essence in ritualism. Time and again, even if the structure and the facade of spiritual life or devotional service is there, but if there are the viruses and bacteria or the termites of ritualism without accepting the essence, actually it corrodes the internal structure. And therefore Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to establish that essence. So Advaita Acharya was knowing that even though these people are Brahmins, the scholars of Navadvip, very high prestigious center of learning in those times, but still had lost the essence. People lost the fruit or lost the goal of life while pursuing the rituals. And therefore he could not tolerate that. And he said, "Krishna, only you will have to appear and rectify this great anomaly." And therefore when Advaita Acharya caused Lord Chaitanya to appear, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would respect Advaita Acharya as good as his god brother, as his spiritual master, because he was the disciple of Srila Madhyandapuri, the godbrother of his spiritual, Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master, Ishwarpuri. So he used to always offer worship, respect, devotion to Sri Advaita Acharya. But Sri Advaita Acharya was very embarrassed. Though he was Sadashiv, and though he was the one who actually caused Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to disappear, he considered himself as a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, without forgetting that essence, he was uncomfortable about receiving respect from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That destroyed his spirit of servitude. So he wanted to establish his spirit of servitude even at the cost of annoying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? Because in conclusion, he wanted himself to be accepted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as his eternal servant. Therefore, externally he annoyed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by sitting in amidst a group of Mayavadi scholars and propounding the philosophy of oneness against the spirit of bhakti is what he professed, to come to the spirit of devotional service. This is the beauty of Vaishnavism. Many an acharyas have taken the path of so-called against the current to actually flow in the current more swiftly, more clearly. And therefore, seemingly at that time, everyone misunderstood, mistook Sri Advaita Acharya as being deviating from the philosophy. But his heart was calling out for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's rebuking. So once he rebukes me, once he's chastised me, that means he's intimate. If someone can chastise us and we still don't lose respect for that person, that is intimacy. Yesterday, Radha Lapa was explaining very nicely how, due to false ego, we immediately maintain distance of people or someone who doesn't approve of what we do or what we want to do. So immediately there is a kind of repulsion from the false ego that this person is against my desire. And therefore, in this case of Srila Advaita Acharya, he very well knew that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, I am so intimate with him that he will accept me as his servant by chastising me. And in this case, even not considering his age, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and tried to physically beat him up. And Malini Devi was saying that he's an old man, he will die, while Sri Advaita Acharya was in great ecstasy. And therefore, he said, finally now you accepted me as your servant. This is the success of my endeavor. This is why I called you for. I didn't call you to gain reputation that I am the one who called Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and I am the honorable position of being the guru, as good as guru of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore we also find in Srila Madhendrapuri's Leela that though he was such a great soul, in fact Prabhupada writes his devotional service is all about three dreams. All his devotional service can be recounted in three dreams. First dream, to unearth Gopalji from the bushes. Second dream, to bring Chandan, anoint the body of Gopal with Chandan. And third dream, anoint the body of Gopinath with the same Chandan that he brought for Gopalji. So just see, Gopalji, Gopinathji and Jagannathji, what a kind of nexus they have. For seva of Gopalji, Srila Madhyamadhapuri goes to Gopinathji. Gopinathji gives him sweet rice. Then he is indebted. In fact, he feels very, very embarrassed because as soon as he hears that Gopinathji has stolen sweet rice, he immediately became afraid of becoming famous. And he escaped from that place. And he went to Jagannathji, Jagannathpuri, as an ordinary servant of Gopalji. He didn't come with the tag that I am the acharya who installed I am the one who was, did a pran pratishtha of Gopalji, and you know, he just said, Gopalji, it was just a dream. Can you imagine? It was just a dream. That go and collect sandalwood from Malaya hills or Malaya sandalwood. So he goes, and the devotees of Lord Jagannath Ji, Sri Jagannath Ji also cooperate and say, okay, this is the service which Jagannath Ji can offer to Gopal Ji. So the devotees of Jagannath Ji were very, very cooperative to service of Gopal Ji. And because of that cooperation, Krishna is all the more pleased. Gopal Ji is so pleased with that reciprocation that he wants to offer, that he wants to anoint the body of Gopinath with sandalwood and forget his own heat. So when he goes to Gopinath Ji, the dream comes, the third dream comes. Now you offer all the sandalwood here. Srila Mandindapuri considered service of Krishna as his only property. He was not thinking, where am I serving? Am I serving Gopal? He left Vrindavan for service of Gopal Ji, but he landed up in Remuna and tasted the sweet rice for the service of Gopal Ji, but landed up in Jagannath Puri for the sandalwood, ultimately gave service to Gopinath Ji only. And from there he went back to Jagannath Puri. Because he was so indebted to the servants of Lord Jagannath, that because of the cooperation of the Sevites of Lord Jagannath, I could serve all of them. And therefore, this is so wonderful that actually Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recounts the pastime of Srila Madhindapuri at Remuna and not at Govardhan. Because Gopinath Ji was the mediator between Gopal Ji and Jagannath Ji. And this way, the devotees of Krishna, when they treasure only service, then there is only Krishna everywhere. Everything in the mud and the earthen pot of that kheer, also he experienced Krishna's presence. That he was eating some few pieces of mud every day. So for a devotee of Krishna, he saw the sweet rice, he became agitated. I want this sweet rice to be offered to Krishna, Gopalji. So a devotee goes anywhere in this world, sees what best can be offered to Krishna. And that is how Rukmini Devi is trying to position herself as just being a servant of Krishna. I just want the position of being the servant. And therefore, we find that in this position also, where she is a consort of Sri Krishna in Dwarka, she cannot just be comfortably couched in the position that I am the consort of Krishna. So in any situation, a devotee in any stage of advancement cannot land up in a comfortable or a comfort zone. And therefore, what happens is what in this pastime, again connected to Rukmini Devi, is the pastime of deliverance of Muchukund Maharaj. Again, there is a nexus here. And if you can understand the nexus and the impetus, then you can find that there is a transaction of bhakti happening. The transaction of bhakti happens when Krishna awakens Muchukund Maharaj from the comfort zone, because he has to respond to the courage of Rukmini Devi. In order to reciprocate the courageous appeal of Rukmini Devi, Krishna is forced to awaken Muchukund Maharaj from his comfort zone. And in doing that, he is able to challenge the threat of Kalyavan also. So when there are two devotees, Krishna is trying to bring, because of the courage of one devotee, the other devotee is awakened from the comfort zone to challenge the Yavana or the Mlecha who is attacking Krishna. In that way, the levels of devotional service happens where from complacency to comfort to courage and to challenge. In this way, Krishna can see us through
different phases of bhakti. And therefore here, even in the case of Gajendra, he was in a comfortable place. As long as he was in his comfortable place, he landed up in a situation where he was in the waters. Even if the place was quite comfortable, the situation became very grave because of the crocodile. And the crocodile of Maya, or the crocodile of the snare, or the serpent of material existence, can take us off guard at any time. And therefore Prabhupada would write that purport of Gajendra's elephant crisis at a time when one of his disciples were facing difficulty in practicing the regulative principles of sannyas. And he mentions in that purport that just like Gajendra was in that situation, every devotee is in a particular situation where the crocodile of Maya, there is a fight with the crocodile of Maya. And therefore, if the fight was on the land, it would have been very easy for Gajendra to fight. But because Gajendra was in the water, the crocodile was getting his nourishment in the water, while Gajendra was fasting for 1000 celestial years. He was reducing in diminution in strength, in mental, emotional and sensual power. Prabhupada writes three things: physical strength, enthusiasm and sensual power. If these three things are there, then a devotee can fight Maya in a healthy position. Else, at any time, the crocodile, which is in a superior position, in a very natural environment, can overpower a devotee. And therefore Prabhupada writes in that purport, therefore the divisions of varnashram are made, by which everyone is able to place oneself in a natural environment where the fight with Maya can go on. So the fight with Maya is the critical factor and the environment is the supporting situation. So similarly, the comfort of one's position should be determined also by the environment and the emotional situation. So therefore, physical strength, enthusiasm and sensual power is required to fight Maya. And wherever a devotee is well situated in having these three things, can actually fight Maya, irrespective whether one is a grahastha, one is a brahmachari, one is a sannyasi. And Prabhupada writes sannyasi at the end, that is very difficult in Kali Yuga. And therefore he mentions that nevertheless one should not give up fighting. And therefore here, from the comfort zone of Muchukund Maharaj and Gajendra, the complacency may come. Once a devotee asks Sasarup Maharaj, how to overcome complacency? He said that complacency means that when we are satisfied with the material benefits that come with the practice of bhakti. When there are some material benefits that come with the practice of Krishna consciousness or devotional service, then we become complacent. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in fact, when they were all going from Navadvip Dham to Jagannath Puri, so on the way, he asked his followers, have you brought anything with you? Have you brought some money with you? Have you brought some resources with you? All of them said, we have brought nothing. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told, okay, now you can travel with me. Because now you are carefree. You are not worried about how and what you will do with your resources. Now you are free to depend on Krishna. And therefore, sometimes complacency can come because of the resources that we possess. Because then we can depend on those resources. And ultimately, on the pledge of being dependent on the resources to use in Krishna service, we actually use the resources for our comfort level. And that's where it becomes dredged into the complacent mode, where we are satisfied. And any time when we are satisfied with what we have or what we have done, That is the stagnation point. And therefore, the next situation is to come to the courage zone. From a situation of comfort to complacency, one has to take the courage to come out of these both zones. And therefore, here, in fact, we find that the courage zone is like what happened with Jad Bharat or Bharat Maharaj. Once he actually also slipped into the complacent zone. Because he became very, the practice of sadhana bhakti became very ritualistic. Because the distraction was there in the form of the deer, and so-called acts of philanthropy or so-called acts of taking care of the deer became superior to the dedication to the service that he was offering with his body, mind. And therefore, by slipping slowly in the complacent zone, he did not realize that he was being dragged far away from Krishna. But then next life as a deer, he realized his folly. So now he was alert, but he could not do anything. The soul in the deer's body could only make a resolute will, but could not express it. So only the human form of life, that will, which has been growing for a long amount of time, can be expressed. So next life, as Jad Bharat, he came to the courage zone. Despite being rebuked, despite being mistreated, despite being misjudged by people, he was sure that internally he had not lost track of Krishna. He was internally with Krishna all the time, but made sure so therefore there's a two life of devotees. The internal heart of a devotee is never made public by Vaishnava. And therefore acts by such a devotee in the material world may become a source of bewilderment for many of the people. Like Jad Bharat was Mahabhagavat. As long as he was not offering that palanquin service to the king, everyone thought he was a useless chap. And then when he started to hold the palanquin and he was jumping across, the king asked, "What's the problem?" He said, "This is the fourth man who has come. He is creating a trouble." But had he not created a trouble, he would not receive enlightenment from Jad Bharat. So therefore, because of his weird behavior, ultimately expressed his heart. Because now Maharaj Rahuguna was in a position to understand from him by understanding the heart of a devotee. By having a glimpse of the heart of a devotee, he started inquiring. And that's how Jad Bharat became guru of Maharaj Rahuguna. So therefore, the courage zone is required, wherein there might be Srila Haridas Thakur again being an outcast accepted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would never go to Jagannath Puri temple. Would actually find himself always low profile, would stay away, would not go around the Sevites of Lord Jagannath, would walk around the beach. So sometimes we find these people, they are too much, they have too much of kind of low self-esteem. Or sometimes devotees like Jad Bharat behave in a weird manner. And therefore, the courage of a devotee has to go through internal resistance and external resistance both. And when this is done, then we find also in the situation of Jatayu and Marich, both were very courageous. But ultimately Jatayu gave up his life to fight Ravan, to try to save Mother Sita. Marich actually was killed by Ram. He could see Lord Ram while his death. But ultimately, what was the real courage? The courage was one who actually saved, who actually was a servant, and did not care for one's personal conveniences while fighting for Lord Ram's pleasure. And therefore he ultimately received the highest honor and worship from Sri Ram. So similarly, the courage of Rukmini Devi was the impetus for Krishna to awaken Muchukund Maharaj. And this way we find that we go to the challenge zone, where a devotee now beyond courage wants to voluntarily take challenges for Krishna's pleasure. Like Srila Prabhupada, he took the courage to go to the west from Vrindavan to New York. It was a courageous idea to preach. But apart from that, the challenge which was awaited in New York was unknown. So the path of Krishna consciousness can be arduous and long, but filled with patience when the goal is very clear. Else the journey becomes very painful and very impatient, because we don't find the results coming as per our expectation, because our vision has become very shortened. The journey is long, but the vision is short, then the endeavor becomes very difficult to undertake and looks like a long haul and feels like we are going nowhere. We are reaching nowhere. But when we expand the vision, when we see through the acharyas from their vision, we can see the long path, and then the journey becomes exciting, adventurous and also rewarding. In fact, this is where we find that even in case of Rukmini Devi, after being married for so many years, still she has to figure out how to please Krishna. It's not so easy, it's not a standard formula, and always the tests are unconventional. We cannot expect the test to be conventional in our life, that the same problem or the same test will come after some time or regularly. The test will be different test. And therefore, if we are ready to serve Krishna, then it's very easy to encounter any kind of challenge. Why? Because ultimately the challenge is an impetus to please Krishna. And in this way we find that Bhagirath Maharaj also takes up that challenge. See the beauty of Bhagirath Maharaj. The way that Ganga has not come by, he was not going to offer worship to Krishna. He was not going to offer worship at Ganga. You don't have to offer worship. What can you offer? She's already coming from Vishnu's feet, lotus feet. So you don't have to offer Ganga to Krishna. She already offered. But now his real effort was to bring the mercy and the grace of Krishna to unlimited fallen living entities. That is his challenge. And this vrata took generations to accomplish. It was not a matter that suddenly Dilip Maharaj's son Amshumam, he tried and then he failed. So many people failed does not mean that endeavor has to be given up. Many people failed means that endeavor has to continue, because the failure of that person has become an asset for the next person who has to try. And therefore, when the person who has left the mission unfinished, we take the mission from that place, we borrow that much asset, previous asset of the hardship and tapasya, and then we add our asset of hardship and tapasya, and probably even if we don't complete it, someone else will take it from there. Like Prabhupada mentioned, even if ISKCON does not remain in the same situation like it is right now, someone will figure out the books, what is written in the books, and we create a new movement. Anyone who is intelligent, if they read Srila Prabhupada's books, can actually create a worldwide revolution. Prabhupada was so convinced about his books, because Prabhupada said, I am convinced I have not written these books. His conviction about his books is not about his writing. His conviction about the books is the grace which is coming through him. And therefore, Bhagirath Maharaj took the tapasya of the previous ancestors, added up his own determination, his own resolution, and made sure that Ganga is to come and liberate not only his ancestors. His ancestors were an excuse or were a medium to take the mercy of Ganga to all the fallen living entities in this material world. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I guess, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his one more of his associate tells Krishna has appeared in Kali Yuga in two forms. One in the form of wood and one in form of water. And he told Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to worship in the form of wood, that is Jagananchi. And I guess,
Pardon?
No, it's one more of his associate or relative of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He told him to worship Krishna in the form of Ganga. So he said these are two forms to worship in Kali Yuga. And therefore Bhagirath Maharaj, because he took care of his ancestors, to liberate his ancestors, that's how Ganga has come. And therefore, the similar pastime is in the protection of Parikshit Maharaj. When Parikshit Maharaj is in the womb of Uttara, and the Brahmastra is attacking her womb, so she is praying to Krishna to save. And that time, Prabhupada mentions the purport that the war is not over. The war was not over because Ashwatthama was still alive. Some of the commanders were still alive, and they were just temporarily cremating the final rites of the five sons of Pandavas, and they were finishing their rites and they are coming back. So it was midway, the end of the conclusion of war. So similarly we find that Krishna immediately took up his chakra. He came and covered the womb of Uttara and protected Parikshit. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that Krishna is not just favorable to the Pandavas, but also to the next generations of Pandavas who are to rule. He didn't just establish Pandavas, he established Parikshit Maharaj also as a king. And because he had to establish Parikshit, therefore he had to save Parikshit. And to save Parikshit, he had to again to break his vow of not lifting the weapon or not participating in the fight. So second time he broke his vow. It's not just only Krishna only took one Sudarshan Chakra and protected the Pandavas, but he protected Parikshit also. But why? Because Uttara called. Now Uttara called for Krishna's help and Krishna immediately responded. Also because of Uttara's great qualities. Prabhupada mentions Uttara was a good daughter of a great king. First qualification, she was a good daughter of a great king. Secondly, she was a good student of a great teacher, Arjun. Then she was a good wife of a great warrior, that is Abhimanyu. And ultimately, because of that, she became a good mother of a great king. Unless one becomes a good son or daughter, one cannot become a good disciple also. Unless one does not become a good disciple, one cannot become a good mother or father. Sorry, good husband or wife. And unless one does not become a good husband or wife, cannot become a good parent. And unless one does not become a good parent, one cannot attract the mercy of Krishna. Why? Because in all these situations, we want to become good because we want to serve Krishna. We want to become best so that we can make a facility to serve Krishna. So Uttara was so qualified. Goindra mentions in this book, very nice small chapter, that though they knew, Virat, that Abhimanyu had to participate in war and will be ultimately killed, probably, still he gave his daughter in marriage to Abhimanyu, knowing that risking that her daughter's future. But he was not concerned about daughter's future, he was concerned about the legacy that would come from her daughter. And therefore, the Kshatriyas who were Vaishnavas were more concerned about leaving a legacy of Vaishnavism. They were not considered about only orderly state and the welfare of the citizens. And therefore Prabhupada mentions the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that a king rules the kingdom in a way that promotes education, culture and devotion. Without a good education and culture, devotion cannot flourish. Without having a good character and good conduct, one actually can also not become a good Vaishnava. Because Vaishnava has all good qualities. And therefore Prabhupada said, Uttara was fortunate in all respects. She was a good daughter. She was a good student. She was a good wife. And therefore she was a good mother. If we have good sons and daughters good disciples, good husbands and wife, good fathers and mothers, then it will be very easy that everyone can become Krishna conscious very easily, very nicely, very effectively. And therefore, these can be accomplished through a proper structure. What Srila Prabhupada mentioned many a times, a social structure which promotes education, culture and devotion. Since I had been to this state of Manipur, Prabhupada mentions this, Manipur is a very beautiful place. It's a Vaishnav state. Vaishnav state means practically every married lady wears a tilak, Gaudiya Vaishnav tilak. This is their alankar. I mean, not that because they are devotees everywhere. They are born with that culture. And this whole wonderful story is about a great king who is a Vaishnav. In fact, the history of Vaishnavism in the state traces back to 15th century when a king gave his successor, King Kyamba, a Sudarshan Chakra to worship. And that chakra brought a lot of auspiciousness and supernatural power to the kingdom, and they worshipped the chakra in a temple. Thereafter, King Garib Niwas was the king who actually worshipped Lord Ramchandra. And because of that, his grandson was Bhagyachandra Maharaj, who was also a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, of Krishna. By somehow of his uncle, he attacked him with the help of Burmese king. That time in the 17th century, way back in 1759, and conquered the kingdom, and he had to flee along with his wife. So he went to the next kingdom, the Ahom kingdom, which is now called Assam. And Rajeshwar Maharaj was the king. So he took shelter, he took asylum there. But then the uncle was very smart. He sent a letter to this king of Ahom and said that this king is an imposter. The real Bhagyachandra Maharaj has supernatural powers. So if he has supernatural powers, then he is a true Bhagyachandra, otherwise he is a fake one. So next day a test was there, and then next day he was to face a mad elephant and had to tame him. Very lethal mad elephant. And he was praying to Krishna that you have put me in one test and now you are putting me to another great test which I will feel I will never pass. So he prayed, and Krishna appeared to him in a dream in a beautiful form and said, tomorrow morning before the elephant, in one hand keep Japmala, bead bag. This is like Krishna's bead bag is long back, 17th century, after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Keep bead bag in one hand and garland in another. That means depend on Krishna, is chanting Hare Krishna and worship Krishna along with that. So, next day, Bhagyachandra Maharaj was in that arena, and the mad elephant came. As soon as he approached before him, he knelt before this king suddenly. He was not thinking. See, ultimately all these dreams are very powerful. We find Madhavendra Puri, his dreams were real. So His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj also writes in his book that even sleep, the part of our sleep that we actually execute, also can be executed to perform devotional service. That is a very unheard kind of platform, that you can start practicing bhakti while sleeping. If it is there, then probably we start sleeping more than being awake. But then this elephant knelt down, and immediately he could see on the top of the elephant a mahout, and that was none but Govindji. Beautiful Krishna, bluish boy, and that very same form, and he garlanded that mahout with no one could see. And ultimately he had told in the dream again that as soon as this happens, I will help you regain the kingdom of Manipur and re-establish as your king, but make sure you establish a temple of mine. And in the temple, make sure that you arrange for Rasila performance to be done for my pleasure. But when the king had to again fight with King Rajeshwar, when he came and back and attacked to regain the kingdom back, he got the kingdom after a few struggle, and he became the king. But he forgot in the midst of his so many busy administrative duties of setting up the kingdom back again. So a tribal lady came back to his palace and told that, I was sent by this beautiful blue boy, he's playing in my fields, and this blue boy has been angry and has been telling me that go and tell the king to remember the promise that he had made to me. Immediately the king remembered the promise, and there was an old jackfruit tree in Kaina from which the deities had to be carved out. And he then engaged the sculptors to carve the deities. But every time a deity was carved out of the jackfruit tree, the wood of the jackfruit tree, the deity would not be the same, because the instruction was that as you have seen my form, the similar form you have to carve out. And therefore he was saying, no, not this, not this. In this way 9 deities were carved. 8 deity was carved and there was hardly any wood left. The last deity that was carved was exactly the form that he had seen. And that the first deity was called Vijay Govind. The last deity that was carved out, there was Govindji. And that's how the temple was established in 1779. And in November of 1779, along with that temple, the first Ras Lila was offered during the Kartik Purnima or the Sharad Purnima, 3 days festival. So he was also given in the dream what kind of costumes, what kind of dance, what kind of music. So he orchestrated each and every detail very, very meticulously, and he personally guided what kind of costumes, what kind of dances, what kind of music, what kind of drums, all for the pleasure of Krishna. But there was no deity of Radharani along with Krishna. So Govindji was in the center of Rasila, but there was no deity. So he had his daughter Princess Bimbavati to stand next to the deity of Govind and offered her as the consort of Lord Govinda. And therefore Bimbavati became so much surrendered to this form of Govindji that she never married, and she kept on singing of praises of Lord Krishna, and she's called Sija Lairobi. As famous, she became as a famous princess who actually owned the Lord. In fact, after her departure, the deity of Radharani was carved in her likeness, in her form, in her resemblance. And the first drum that was to be played in the festival, the king himself became the first drummer. And that's how the festival of Maharas, Vasantaras and Rasila is still being practiced and performed by all Manipuris till date. Even young children, they learn this from their childhood. Such is a beautiful culture of Vaishnavism. When there is a very nice systematic plan, there is a whole social structure, it is even existing till now. The resemblances are even there, beautiful. And therefore, in a similar way, Prabhupada said, this Manipuri kingdom is a state where Babruvahan was the son of Chitrangada and Arjun. And the king of Manipur at that time had requested Arjun, if the son is born, the son will be the king of Manipur here and he will not go with you. So therefore, Arjun gave Babruvahan and he became the adopted son of his maternal grandfather, the father of Chitrangada. So that's how the culture was preserved, and still till date these people are called as Manipuri Vaishnavas. And they are so simple, so natural, and they naturally worship Govindji, Vijay Govind. Also there's a deity of Advaita which Bhagyachandra Maharaj, on his way back, he renounced everything and went back. He was a disciple of Narottam Das Thakur. The Vaishnavism was guided by Srila Narottam Das Thakur, who was disciple of Lord, who was disciple and under the aegis of Srila Jiva Goswami and Loknath Goswami. And therefore the whole Vaishnavism in Manipur is actually the adaptation of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in local tradition. So many varieties of Vaishnavism are there. As we said, the trees, the branches of trees are many, but the fruit is the same. The taste of the fruit is the same. So that taste of fruit you can still see in the live culture of Manipur. And therefore, this is a beautiful narration. Similarly, Rukmini Devi, is also praying to Krishna that ultimately let me just be a servant, and that is my only fortunate position. And therefore, this is the conclusion and the beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam, that if we can just try to become a servant, then probably we can find that the journey, the long journey back home, back to Godhead, will be filled not with comfort and complacency but with courage and challenges. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.